I believe that way more people are leaders in a leadership position than they realize. And here's how I see what leadership is. I think there are actually two primary components. And one is nurture, and the other is challenge.
Hey, it's great to have you back for another episode of the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast, where I feel genuinely called to help you become a leader that people love to follow. If you're new to our community, we drop a new episode on the first Thursday of every month, and we offer you a leader guide with in-depth discussion questions and additional content that'll be helpful to you. If you don't get the leader guide, go to life.church/leadership podcast. Tell us you want it, and we'll send you the leader guide with the release of every episode. I want to say a big thank you to those of you that are inviting others to be a part of our community on social media. I will work really, really hard to bring content that adds value to your leadership. And a gift to me is when you invite others to be a part of our community. Guess what? Today, we have an amazing guest on our show. Let me tell you about Dr. Josh Axe. He is a certified doctor of natural medicine, a doctor of chiropractic, and a clinical nutritionist. He is the founder of draxe.com, a natural health website. He advised United States athletes in the 2012 Olympic Games. He's the co-founder of Ancient Nutrition, a 120-employee company dedicated to the health for people and farmland. My wife and kids love this guy. Whenever they go in the grocery store, they see his products everywhere. He is the author of many best-selling books, and his newest book is called Think This, Not That, 12 Mind Shifts to Break Through Limiting Beliefs and Become the Person That You Were Born to Be. Dr. Axe, hey, welcome to the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast.
Hey, Craig, thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Well, I've been looking forward to this, and to a little family background. As you know, I'm married to Amy and have six kids. And in, I don't know how, I think this is my sixth or seventh year of podcasting. I don't think they've been more excited about a guest than they are about me having you. So I hope I don't blow this interview because they're waiting for it to come out. My whole family has been impacted by your work, and so we're excited to have you on.
Well, I'm so honored, and you've got a big family. I know I follow you on social media, and so I get to see the family pics here and there. So
it is it's big and growing more and more. We're on trajectory to have our third wedding in a calendar year. We are multiplying. We are fruitful and multiplying. Hey, it's exciting to have you on. And I know a lot of people would know your work as kind of a natural practitioner and helping people with medicine. And your gifts and talents are much broader than that. And today it seems like you're spending as much time developing leaders as you are helping people in their physical and mental beings. I'd love to talk to you about kind of your leadership journey. Can you tell me, was there a first time in your life, maybe as a kid or a teenager or young adult, that you recognize that you might have the gift of leadership?
Well, you know what's so funny? My mom always told me this growing up. My mom is a very faith-driven person. So she would always tell me, I named you Joshua after the character in the Bible. And so my mom would always tell me and encourage me to go out and lead. And, you know, and I think from, you know, high school and college athletics and those playing sports, I think there was a little bit of that. But, you know, I feel like I really just decided to dive into a leadership role more so when I was earning my doctorate. There was an opportunity to work with some doctors who started these clubs all over campuses that were really focused on being mission driven. And so the group was called Max Living. And so I went and started the club on campus, and I'd never spoken before in front of a group of people. And I remember the first time I got up and was introducing the doctor who was going to come in and speak and just sweating profusely. But afterwards he said, hey, you did a great job. And that was really encouraging to me. And so I kept with it and just continued to develop as a leader. You know, another time was I went down to South Florida and heard John Maxwell speak. And so I drove four hours from my school and went down and heard him speak. And I remember I walked in the room and the first question he asked to start a seminar was, what's your plan for growth? And why do you want to be a leader? And so for me, sitting in that lecture, I was so excited hearing from, and you know, I mean, John Maxwell, right, just sharing so much wisdom and so much gold. So that really inspired me as well. And then going back, I would say this, you know, another instance, if I really think about it, because this is where I would say a lot of my purpose came from, My mom, when I was in junior high, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was really surprising because my mom, if you would have looked at her, she looked really fit and healthy, but yet got that diagnosis. And she was my gym teacher in elementary school. She was a swim instructor. So again, she was fit, but she went through after that diagnosis, all the conventional medical treatments. She went and had a mastectomy, went through rounds and rounds and rounds of chemotherapy. And I remember her hair falling out. I remember her looking like she had aged 20 years in 2 weeks. And one of the things that happened during that time was there were two things I said to myself internally. One was, I never want to see anyone have to go through this again. And the other thing was, I wonder if there's a better way. And I think that is part of what kicked off my leadership journey, because I really, it caused me to start reflecting with myself and wanting to help others with their health. In fact, one of the first things I did, Craig, was when I, that same year, I was about to enter high school and I stopped drinking soda and stopped eating candy bars. And so when other kids were doing that in high school, I would never do that. If there was pizza, maybe I'd have one piece, but not two or three. And so I just became very, very conscious of those things. And I think that there is an element of leadership there, sort of walking the walk. I think I became very conscious that I want to help people like my mom. I want to serve. I want to do more with my life in that way. So I think that's probably the, you know, maybe the biggest tipping point in my life that really started off both my health career, but also being very conscious of leading well.
So in a health career, I think there, and I'm asking you this, I'm going to lead you, because I think there are a lot of people who may be doing something professionally or have a ministry interest, and they may say, well, this is how I help people, but I'm not really a leader. I think a lot of people would look at a doctor or a health practitioner and say, well, you're serving people, but that's not really leading. I think you would have a different take on that, and I'd love to hear kind of how you see what you've done through the years as leading people.
Yeah, so I believe that way more people are leaders in a leadership position than they realize. And here's how I see what leadership is. I think there are actually two primary components. And one is nurture, and the other is challenge. And so, you know, as a physician, I had people come into my clinic constantly who, one, they needed to be nurtured, they needed to be encouraged, they needed to be given hope, they needed to be loved, they needed to be encouraged that they could heal and that they could get better. But then also, sometimes I would have patients come in and I'm trying to think the best terminology for this, but they needed a little bit of a kick in the butt. They needed me to tell them, hey, you know what? You've got to make some changes right now, or it's going to lead down a bad path, and really challenge them. It's more of that coaching mentality. So for me, in order to get the best results out of my patients, it really did take a combination of encouragement and challenging them to go out and be the best they could be. And I think it's across the board. If you think about parents, what they're called to do, you know, there's more of the role that oftentimes now mothers and fathers are both going to do some of these. But there's more of that motherly role of nourishment and love and helping build that side. And there's dad, at least this is the way my family was. My father was more, hey, self-discipline, self-control, you know, courage, and go out there and challenge yourself to be your best. And so, you know, I think that if, whether it's parents, or I coach a lot of doctors and a lot of entrepreneurs now, I've done mastermind groups, and I'm always getting, you know, questions of people, how do I build a supplement company, or, you know, or an online, you know, web platform, and those sorts of questions. But I think for myself, when I've been around the best leaders, Craig, that's something they really did for me, is they both encouraged me, but they also challenged me to and called me to something higher in my life. And so for me as a doctor, I think the best doctors are the ones that both, because listen, I know quite a few doctors with, you know, we would use the terminology, not the best bedside manner. And right. One of the things that's missing there is they will tell you the truth, but there's no love, right? And there are studies that show how important our belief about healing is, called the placebo and nocebo effect. And so if you go into a doctor and a doctor tells you, you have to be on this drug the rest of your life, or hey, this condition is something you always have to live with, and it's just going to be a steady decline, they're really, you know, they're really taking away hope from you. And so there is an oath that all doctors take, and it's first do no harm. And I think actually some doctors who don't have these leadership skills harm their patients because they actually pull hope away from them. And this is why I think it's always important to have this level of truth and love. And if you don't have both of those, I think you are really missing out on what leadership is. So I think doctors, parents, you know, entrepreneurs, I really think that way more people are leaders than probably realize it.
I love that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it was John Maxwell who said leadership is influence and everyone has influence. At least I have been quoting him, and hopefully it's him, for years and years. And I think
I read that too.
You're right that there are so many people that do have more leadership influence than I think they give themselves credit for. And I would love it, Dr. Axe, if you would not be modest, not be shy, not be humble, but kind of be truthful with us about, if we could, you know, lift up the hood and look at the engine that's in your brain, your mindset, can you kind of tell us and give you permission to be real honest, and what are your gifts that set you apart? What makes you special? And I kind of want to know the story behind the story so I can highlight what I think it is. But I'd love for you to tell us, there are doctors who are good with medicine, not good with people. There are those that are good with people, not as sharp. There are those that can build big companies, those that can't. They're those that can have broader influence, those that don't. What is it in your DNA, in your story, in your history, in your mindset that sets you apart and enables you to help more people than a lot of others in a similar field? Hey, Craig here, and I want to take a moment to tell you about something that may help you grow in your leadership. In episodes 124 and 126, we looked at the 8 habits of great leaders. We talked about practical things like the no snooze habit, the habit of pre-deciding, and others. Now, you don't have to master all 8 of these habits, but the really successful leaders have mastered most of them. If you want to start incorporating a few of these habits into your leadership, we've made it easy for you. Our team put together a free 1-page PDF of all of these habits plus identity statements. These identity statements are designed to change how you think, and that will change your habits. You can tape this to your mirror. You can read it before bed. You can put it on your desk at work. Remember, if you want to have a bigger impact, develop better habits. Get the free PDF at life.church/great-habits. Now, back to our episode.
Wow. Well, I would say, I'll kick it off with a story, and I think this would be helpful in sort of understanding kind of where it came from. But when I was in high school, I was a terrible student. In fact, I barely graduated high school. I had a C- GPA. And the only reason I graduated is I knew my dad was a, you know, old military guy, and he was just going to be irate if I didn't graduate high school. But one time when I was a freshman in high school, I was in English class, and I had a teacher ask me to stay afterwards. And her name was Miss Noble. And she said, Josh, what do you want to do after high school? And I said, I really want to be a doctor. And the reason was, the year before, my mom had the cancer diagnosis, and I really thought I found part of my purpose in doing that in the future. And she laughed at me out loud, and she said, listen, with your GPA, you'd never get into med school. She said, my daughter is a 3.8 GPA, and she barely got into Ohio State Medical School. She said, listen, you got an F on this paper. You have a D- in the class. You need to try harder. And that was it. And I walked out of there. And I walked out of there. And it's funny, as a 14-year-old, the thing that I took away was, I'm not smart and I can't be a doctor. That's what I walked away with. And then 2 weeks later, my mom brought me to a physician who diagnosed me with ADHD. You know, he was talking about me like I wasn't in the room, says your son has a really severe case of ADHD. He's always going to struggle in school. And so then I walked away with that thinking, well, not only am I not smart, I'm like medically not smart. There's something wrong with me. So I really stopped trying in high school. And so I barely graduated, and I did apply to a lot of colleges. I got denied by most. There was one college though that wrote me back, and they said, they started off with essentially, you're not in, but if you come and you do summer school and you average above a 3.0, we'll let you in. And this was the University of Kentucky. And I thought, well, hey, great. I'm going to go and I'm going to actually try this time. And so I went, and the first class I had was English 101. And the first big assignment was a paper. Okay. And so I tried, and then I had the teacher. It was like deja vu, Craig. She said, Josh, can you stay after class? And I thought, oh no, not this again. And she said, "Hey, what's your major?" And I said, "Well, I haven't chosen a major yet." And she said, "Well, I really think you should consider being an English major or journalism major." She said, "I think you're a great writer. You got the highest grade in the class, and just wanted to say, you know, keep up the great work." And I walked out of there, and it's, you know, one of the things I describe it as is like, it was almost like a memory transplant or a mindset transplant to where I went from believing I'm not smart for 4 years to one single person telling me, "You did a great job." And it completely shifted everything for me. I mean, I went and had averaged above a 3.0 in college. And then I went to Johns Hopkins University. There I averaged a 3.9 GPA and then went on to, you know, become a doctor and do some other things in business I'm really excited about. But all that being said, I had this limiting belief for years. So I just didn't even try. And eventually when I had somebody speak into my life about it. And so the reason I bring that up is I'm a big believer in seeing the greatness in people and speaking it over their life. Because I mean, I've had her do that. I've had a couple other mentors do it and pastors and other people who impacted my life. And there's nothing more meaningful. You know, we have a mutual friend in Michael Hyatt, and Michael Hyatt started a men's group, and I started and because he said it was so impactful for his own growth and for the people around him, I started one modeling what Michael had done. And I had all of the men, right? This is 5 years in, and most of them are entrepreneurs. Some you'd recognize, guys like, you know, Andrew East. I think you may know, Sean Johnson East and Andrew. He played in the NFL, but anyway, so he's in the group, and he told me, and every guy in the group told me that at the end of each group of the year, I go and I put my hand on their shoulder and tell them, "Hey, this is what I see in you." Mm. And every time I've done that, so they've said, "This is the most impactful thing sometimes almost anyone's ever done for me." And I think that today there are so many people who have never had anyone do that for them, that really is something that I'm very conscious of. And that's something I try and do with my employees and team members and the people I lead, letting them know, here are the gifts and skills I see God's given you. Here's the potential I see in you, and really encourage them with that.
That is so powerful. And what's interesting, Dr. Axe, almost everybody that I talk to that's achieved kind of like professional greatness like you has a story like that, where they're on the receiving end of someone help them break through a wrong mindset about themselves and spoke life into them. And now you get to do that to other people. And I'd just like to say to, you know, our community, in order to be successful in anything, you're going to have people that believe in you, investing in you. But one of the greatest gifts you can give others is that moment, that word of encouragement, that breakthrough, that expression of love and belief. Could you, since you now do this for other people, could you kind of just walk us through what would you do? Let's say you're talking to someone else, yeah, and they have a limiting belief. Speaking of that, your book, Think This, Not That, is going to help so many people. And really the whole premise behind that book is breaking through the wrong mindsets to bring about the right ones. If you could tell something from your book, or just in general, if you're going to create a moment with someone to help them see something about themselves, they believed something that is not true, you're going to help them see their potential. Talk me through what that conversation is going to look like.
For starters, one of the things I do is I try and do this. I think sometimes people try and avoid sort of intimate moments or meaningful moments because it makes them uncomfortable. But the first thing I would just say is just embrace that. And so that's number one. And number two, I like to sit down with somebody and look them in the eyes and first off, let them know the character qualities I see in them. And so, like, for instance, if I had my friend Andrew, I would say, "You know what, Andrew, one of the things I've noticed, or a few things I've noticed about you, you are, incredibly generous. When you're around other people, you just, you know, you light them up. You're such an incredible encourager. I also can really see you have these skills as a CEO, being able to run a company successfully. And I just want to let you know, these are gifts that you know, you're just tapping into. I mean, they can go so much higher." And then I remember I'm just giving an example of someone specifically. And I said, "Hey, I think you can be the next Chip and Joanna Gaines with this man and his wife, in terms of, like, you could build out a network. Listen, there's no stopping what you're capable of there." And sort of helping them paint the picture of, "Hey, what are you trying to do now? What are your dreams?" And then one of the things I ask them after I really go through, I try and tap into their character potential and their skill potential. You know, what are those natural talents? Could be communication, could be entrepreneurship, whatever it is. And then from there, what I'll do after I hit on those two things is I will, I will ask them, what's keeping that from happening? Why do you think that would be challenging, or what's keeping you stuck that would what beliefs do you have that you think are the reason why that couldn't become a reality? And by the way, people always have them. I've never done this exercise with somebody where they didn't have an excuse of why that couldn't happen for them. And it's always something that, and it always goes back to something that happened in childhood. Almost always. I mean, if you go back to it was a parent said something or didn't say something, or a teacher or coach or someone like that. But again, I really try and dig in there and say, well, let's go through the top three reasons why you think that may not be able to happen. And it could be something like, well, I'm not a good enough communicator, or, well, I don't really have the business savviness in order to make that a reality, or I'm not smart enough, whatever it is. Or again, there are a number of things, or I'm too old. I mean, there's all kinds of excuses I've heard. And so we'll go through one by one, and I break down. This is, by the way, I want to give credit here. This is a method that a Columbia researcher came up with. It's called the ABCDE method. And I'm going to just simplify. But basically, the first thing in order to break limiting beliefs that I try and do is go through A, is activating the first memory. When is the first time that you believed that couldn't happen? So that's number one, A, okay. And then B is, what's the exact belief? Like, what exactly do you believe the reasons you can or can't do that? The next thing I like to do is go through the consequences. And by the way, this was really effective when I did this with patients, but I think it's equally effective for everyone, is if you continue to believe that you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're not worthy, you don't have the business savviness, you're not a good communicator. If you continue to believe that, what sort of roadblocks is that going to create in your life? Like what are the worst case scenarios if you continue to believe that? Could that also affect your relationships? Could it also affect your health? Could it also affect, you name it? And so we'll go through all the consequences, and then I'll do D. So it's A, B, D, C, D, C, D, E. And D is dispute. Let's dispute this. Why is that not true? Let's go through all the reasons, and let me help with this going through. Hey, listen, I heard you communicate in this small group setting, and everybody was wowed what you just shared from this leadership book we just read. And so is it true that you're not a good communicator, or is it true maybe you're just uncomfortable with people and you haven't done it enough? So we really try and dispute it. And then E is really then replacing. It's bringing an external, a new belief that somebody needs to have to replace it with. And so we sort of say it's a new event. It's okay. So right now I'm going to tell you that's not true. Here's the reason why. And so, and a lot of this has to do with memory. I know we call them beliefs, but oftentimes it's memories. Our memories run a big part of our subconscious. And so what I try and do with people is because I just shared with you earlier, it was a memory. Those were memories I had. My limiting beliefs started with a memory, and it was shattered with a memory. And so what I try and do is be that person and put my hand on their shoulder and look them in the eye and say, this isn't true about you. This is what the truth is, to create a new memory to replace it with.
So I want to hear more about the science of this. If we're going to think this, not that, let's say we acknowledge, okay, I've got this belief that is limiting me. It's probably not true, but it feels true. And so I'm going to dispute it and say, okay, here's what really is true. It may be from a spiritual perspective, it may be practical, it may be from what I believe about myself. And then I'm going to bring in this external belief. Tell me about the science of how does your mind work? Because you've got neural pathways telling you that you're stuck in the lie. What do we need to do to change that mindset and start believing it deep down in our soul?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that's important for everyone to understand, and you do such a great job of this. This is why I love watching so many of your lectures and sermons, is that we really, what continually plays out in our head are memories, and those are turned into narratives. And so there's a story we're continually telling ourselves over and over and over again, and 95% of our thoughts that we have in our beliefs, they're subconscious. There are things we believe that we don't even realize we believe. In fact, the best way to know what you believe is not what you say or write down. It's what you do. Okay. Or you're unwilling to do. And so I think that's important to understand. And so what can start to happen is, and by the way, this is important for healing. One of the things I could share here in a minute is this time last year, I wasn't walking. I didn't walk for an entire year. had a spinal infection, couldn't walk. And I really dove into a lot of the research on neuroplasticity and found that, you know, when you look back at the placebo effect, when that was first term was coined, was back during one of the world wars when the main medics, they ran out of morphine to give these soldiers that had lost their legs and were in incredible pain. And so they started giving them sugar pills. And it was absolutely mind blowing to find out that many of these men had the equal amount of pain relief with taking a sugar pill to morphine. And so, you know, that really sort of activated that. But what happens is if you believe something's going to happen, for instance, healing, if you believe you can heal, your brain will start to send neural pathways. It's called neuroplasticity, where your brain can change, your nerves, the pathways can change. Your body will start doing things in order to heal that area. Well, a very similar thing happens when you have these limiting beliefs. Like if you think about this, 95% of our actions are subconscious. Okay. And so if you believe you can't do something, even when you're subconsciously operating, you won't be moving towards that thing becoming a reality. Versus if you do believe that it can happen, even subconsciously, like when you say things, you'll start moving towards that. And so, I think the big thing though, again, is to realize like this is also why our habits are so important. It's right. Why, like I used to teach, I still teach people, you are what you eat. But even more so, like we are what we consume. We are constantly reinforcing a narrative through stories, songs, slogans, you know, those sort of things on a regular basis. And so I think that it's really important that we're aware that we have to reprogram ourselves on a regular basis to move in the direction that we want to move.
So some people have said that the most difficult person to lead is yourself. In order for you to be as effective and broadly effective in so many different fields is kind of mind-blowing. You've got to be pretty self-disciplined. And I'm guessing that you've had to work through some mindsets of, I'm not good at this, or I'm not the type of person that whatever. Can you tell me a little bit about what do your disciplines look like? And in the spirit of your book, Think This, Not That, what mindsets have you changed in order to become the leader that you are today?
Yeah, well, I'll share another story here because this was another big tipping point for my life. I had a grandfather who was just an amazing person. He lived to be 96 years old. He was a World War II veteran in the Navy. And when he was in his 40s, he worked for this company, Bell Telephone, working on repairing power lines after the Navy. And he was just sort of bored with his job. And so he decided he wanted to be an entrepreneur and he wanted to do something he loved. And that was, really facilitate community. And so him and my grandmother took their life savings, invested it all in a piece of property that had a lake on it and a campground. And so they built out this campground. And then they built out this lake as a swim park. And I would go there as a kid and just enjoy the summers. And it was absolutely amazing. And my grandfather, was an amazing servant. Like he would go to the hospitals. He would volunteer at church and go and pray for people when they were sick, bring them their favorite meal. Really an amazing guy. And so jumping ahead, I was at his funeral. This is about 6-7 years ago. And, there's the part in the funeral where the pastor asks anyone, does anyone have any last words about Howard? And my uncle, and by the way, I'm not proud of this, but I had an uncle a few people down from me who just was in, just blurted out and screamed crying. Howard was my best friend. And I hate to say this, but the first thing that jumped into my head rather than compassion, empathy was, you know, you and my grandfather weren't that close. Like, I don't think you guys are best friends. And then like a second later, I was like, you know what? I'm sure my grandfather was his best friend. There's hundreds of people in this room and half the people here probably feel like my grandfather was their best friend. And so during this funeral, I mean, everybody started saying things like, Howard saved my marriage. He prayed for me. He gave us money when we didn't have anything. I mean, it was amazing, touching time. And one of the things I realized, I was early on in practice. I was writing my first book and I was making money for the first time. And I was sort of going after all these accomplishments. And I kind of had this mental, spiritual reset of, I think I've been chasing accomplishments rather than becoming the right type of person. And so this mind shift for me was really going from accomplishing to becoming. I'll give you an example of this too. Like I used to be a huge Lance Armstrong fan. And I was a triathlete in college, and I would watch him. And I just loved his story about, because my mom overcame cancer. He did. He had this big, philanthropic organization he was running. And I really, really, really admired him. And then when it came out that he was doping, you know, I felt a little bit betrayed. And if you read his book or heard any interviews, it was win at all costs, even costing me my character, my reputation. And so when I was in that moment, I think I just had this realization of like, this is success. You know, you're at your funeral and my grandpa, believe me, when he retired, he did not have much money. He was never on a Forbes cover. He never, you know, hit the Inc. 5000 list or did any of those things, but he was really incredibly successful in my eyes. And so that was a shift I really had I think I started to realize and see this too, that, you know, I think the people that I admire most, people like yourself, John Maxwell, Dave Ramsey, some amazing people that I've just really, you know, been able to follow and admire from a distance. I see this thing that you have great accomplishments, but those come because of your character and because of who you are. And so that's one of the things I get into in the book as well. Here's how you go from this accomplishing mindset to the becoming mindset. An example of this is I started not only having a to-do list, but a to-be list. Good. And so going through my day saying, okay, I want to be generous. I want to be wise. I want to be compassionate, and thinking practically every day, how can I be that type of person?
I'll compliment you. And, I would say we're kind of new friends, meaning like we've been texting for a couple of years. Yeah. We have yet to talk in person, but kind of like a text friendship. And so you heard, you know, I've got three daughters that have some health issues, and on your own, I never asked, but you even said, hey, could I be of any assistance to them? I'd be happy to talk to them, which is incredibly generous with as much as you have going. And that is, you know, to me is a real testimony of you becoming the person that you really want to be. You want to be generous. You want to be helpful. And that's, you know, I would never even think to ask, but you offered that. And I just want to say thank you, because people may admire you from a distance, but when they get up closer, you're even better than what they would admire. And that means a lot to me personally.
And let me say something, Craig, too. I think it's making me think of this as well for just everybody. Like, I think I'm really conscious as if people want to grow and become their best, as we talk about, like becoming, one of the charts I get to in the book is that everybody should be conscious of is taking your character to the highest level and your unique gifts and talents. Like, if I think about Michelangelo, you know, the artist, the painter, we Chelsea and I love, you know, the Sistine Chapel and Pieta and the Statue of David, but he took his unique talent to the highest level possible. It's like the parable of the talents, turning 2 into 4 or 5 into 10. And then there's this other level of sort of character. And so, because there's a lot of people who are becoming, doing great things, impactful things, but they're doing it towards, you know, towards evil, versus being conscious of really combining those things of always focus on growing in character, always growing in skill. And so I really see, you know, like if I understand how to help anyone with the health issue, like that's part of my talent. I'm like, I want to take that to the highest level possible and honor God with those gifts. And so I think that's something that's for everybody to be, you know, do you remember? Well, I know you definitely remember this. I remember when I was in junior high, those WWJD bracelets out, like what would Jesus do? And it's a very similar thing. You know, when you look at Aristotle, when he talks about our lives should be lived like archers. And so, and it's actually interesting too, that the Bible is very similar thing. Sin means to miss the mark, but Aristotle, the famed philosopher, uses that same term of like, what are we aiming at in life, right? Like what's our aim? And so that's one of the things I always think about too. I think if you're going to optimize your life, take your unique, like, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of this. Like, what is your unique gift and skill? That thing that you can do better than anyone else in the world, and just going deeper and deeper and deeper and developing that skill. And that's something else I think too, if people want to have an impact, is important.
What would that be for you, Dr. X? If you're naming your one unique skill, and we'll go deeper and deeper. What is that?
Well, you know, let me say this. I'm not the most polished communicator. I see people that are incredibly polished, but I do think it's communication. You know, when I ran my functional medicine practice, my favorite part of practice was teaching workshops. And so I would do a weekly or monthly workshop on how to reverse heart disease or heal your thyroid or, you know, heal using food as medicine, whatever it was. And that was always the thing that I felt really inspired to do. And I also, you know, got feedback that it was very helpful. And then I would write newsletters. And so I would write a lot. And so my patients would say, hey, this is great. You know, and actually I started my online website because I would I would print out newsletters, and I had a patient say, hey, I would really love to get this to my aunt in North Carolina or uncle in New Jersey. And so I eventually had those posted online, which turned into my website, draxe.com, which eventually became the number one most visited natural health website. You know, we're talking about herbs and foods and fitness and that sort of thing. But for me, I would say it's, you know, at least my biggest passion is communication.
So I don't want to skip over one of your great levels of expertise. So leaders want to get better. They're going to be around other great leaders. They're going to learn how to listen, learn how to empathize. They're going to learn how to delegate. They're going to learn how to create systems. They're going to learn how to manage their time. What would you say, Dr. Axe, about what we eat, about our sleep, about our exercise, yeah, our physical, mental rhythms? How important do those ingredients play into our leadership development? And pretend like I know nothing and tell me, where do I start? What does it matter at all?
One, I think it matters a lot. And I'll give you an example of this. We had I had a patient who was a pastor, and I asked, and he was my best patient I ever had, by the way. He was really fit for in his 70s, and he was just a great guy.
That's a big statement. But, he's the best you ever had. Someone send that guy.
Yeah, he was literally the best patient I ever
Chick-fil-A
had.
Chick-fil-A or whatever. That's a big accomplishment. So sorry, that's a big statement. Yeah. All right, keep going.
Yeah, yeah. And he was, because, and the reason was, it's like, if I told him to do it, he was doing it. Yeah. I mean, he just was hungry to get healthier and healthier. And I asked him once, I said, hey, Pastor John, why, I said, you're in here a lot. And by the way, my practice was more functional medicine. We also did physical therapy. We did fitness. We did nutrition. So it wasn't like he was sick. He was coming for wellness at that point. But he was coming in and he said, I want to be doing mission trips in my 90s still. That's what he told me. And I just thought, wow, that's just, you know, that's so amazing that you want to be in your 90s. And then, I've got a friend here. I don't know if you know Don Finto.
Don't.
But he's a, he's a missionary, and he just went to Iraq. He's 93 years old. And that's just another example. But all that being said, I think it's the same for entrepreneurs. If you want to be or any leader, if you want to be your best, you're going to be better when you're physically fit. I mean, listen, I've had days where I haven't felt well, or maybe I want to say where I didn't eat healthy, but honestly, it just really hasn't happened much. So I'm trying to, let's say I didn't get a good night's sleep. Okay. Cause I had to, you know, get my 3-year-old down and she was, you know, up all night. So, but it's like, it's just hard for me to be my best. It's hard for me to write. It's hard for me to think. It's hard for me to be creative when I am not physically fit at a certain level. I'm not saying people need to be out and do power lifters or CrossFitters or triathletes, but I think just generally speaking, when people are physically at their best, they're going to perform better at work, you know, and they're going to live a lot longer. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, imagine if you can live to be in your 90s and you do have another 20 years of work, especially mentoring others. And some of those years later on, I think are the most important. I think a lot of times what we see right now is a lot of people are in their hero phase and we're seeing them make an impact. But I think the biggest impact is sort of, you know, if we're talking about Joseph Campbell or Donald Miller's got a great book on this, sort of living out that guide, that Gandalf, that Yoda, or that whatever sort of, TV character we want to talk about, but being able to really multiply leaders at that. And a lot of times that doesn't happen till later on. Anyways, I'm probably getting a little off track here, but my point is I think that being physically fit is really important. Let me share a few things that might even surprise some people, though, when it comes to getting physically fit and being your best. Number one, let's talk about fitness. You don't have to exercise every day. You don't have to exercise an hour a day. In fact, the studies show, and this surprised me, it's not weightlifting, it's not cardio that actually increases your lifespan the most, it's walking. Like when you look at the longevity research, walking 20 plus minutes a day or multiple times a day was probably the biggest predictor of longevity across the board. And so even if you're saying to yourself, hey, I don't want to go, you know, to the gym and lift weights, then just go on a lot of walks. That alone will extend your lifespan and take your health to a whole new level.
So to ask one question, that it is outdoors better than a treadmill? Does it matter?
Outdoors is better, but it doesn't negate. Well, let me say this. There's an additional benefit from being outdoors. So in terms of the actual exercise, it's not better. Okay. You're still getting the same benefits. Now, sunshine, we've all heard of vitamin D. You're going to be getting more vitamin D. You're going to be getting more local pollen and things that actually help adapt your immune system mm-hmm. and actually strengthen your immune system. So there are benefits of being outdoors, but in terms of the actual exercise, all things are equal on the exercise.
And to take that even but more, based on my research too, that it, mentally, the 20-minute mark typically is when your body starts releasing endorphins, and, yes. and you start, that's where you start feeling good. If you do, if you walk with somebody else, there's additional benefits that fight off depression, change your mindset. And I would say, like, my marriage to Amy, oddly enough, like, what are the keys to it? One, I think, is praying together, because it's really hard to fight and not get along if you pray once a day together. And then two, I like literally think is walking together, because there we feel good together in the same space. We have time to talk. It helps us physically. And so to me, every leader could have a different three or four or five things, but there are probably going to be three or four or five key ingredients that are contributing factors to your relationships, your mindset, your mood, your energy. And I like to be a student of what are those specific ones. If we were going to start at the basic, you're going to say, okay, Craig, let's walk 20 minutes a day. If I'm going to think diet, if I'm going to think supplements, if I'm going to think sleep, what are some other basics that would be important to me to be holistically at my best to influence people and for good?
Well, number one, as we talked about walking, if you can just walk 20 minutes a day. And if you can walk 20 minutes twice a day, do that. And then, of course, the next best thing after walking in addition would be weight training. It is going to be really beneficial if you can get in and do that, because one of the number one things that causes aging is losing muscle mass. So maintaining muscle mass is important. So I wanted to mention that. So number one, exercise. Number two, and this isn't an order of importance, because I think that most of these things are very closely, they're almost equal. The next thing is diet. You know, the thing that I would say is, I mean, this is so basic, and then I'll just take it one step further, but, just eat real food. You know, I mean, there's all these diets out there, keto and paleo and vegan and about a million others. But just eating real food, eat an apple rather than a candy bar, or if you're, you know, making food at home, buy real chicken. But I would say try and buy organic whole foods as much as you can. And that alone will make a big difference in your life. Now, to go a step further, I would say most people overconsume carbohydrates. And really what you want to focus on is protein means primary. That's the number one macronutrient you should try and get is you want to try and get 30, 40, 50 grams of protein every single meal. So getting more protein, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, is the most important. Then after protein, you really want to just focus on things that are nutrient dense. So vegetables, fruits like berries, specifically some healthy fats like avocado, coconut, almond butter. I mean, those are all great examples, olive oil, but I would say really focus on protein, nutrients, and some healthy fat in your meals. And of course, fiber is going to be there with those nutrients. So I would do that. And here's another idea too, that I think could be impactful is just change breakfast. If you just changed your breakfast, that's one third of your diet. I mean, that is a big leap forward. And so one idea there, my patients saw great results with this. And this is what I've been doing for a long time now, at least 15 years, if not 20. But oftentimes I'll do a superfood smoothie for breakfast. And there's really three ingredients: one cup of fruit, like blueberries, I tend to do coconut milk because there's some healthy fats in there, and 1 to 2 scoops of protein powder. I tend to do a bone broth or a collagen protein, and maybe another sort of protein like a grass-fed whey or a plant protein. But really, it's just some protein powder, some berries, and then you could just do water as well. So really, it's 2 ingredients, or 3 if you count the water. And if you just changed your breakfast to that, that's one third of your diet. I mean, you're starting off the morning in an incredible way. So that's number two, is eating that with that sort of mindset. Number three, supplement wise, you know, let me just go through the biggest things people are missing based on the, you know, clinical data. Number one is vitamin D. And by the way, vitamin D is best getting it outdoors and not even from a supplement. But if you're not getting sunshine that day, I would try and get a vitamin D supplement, typically 5,000 I use a day. So that's the number one deficiency people have in America. The second biggest deficiency is magnesium. And magnesium is a mineral that's responsible for just relaxation, better sleep at night, healthier bowel movements, a number of those things. The third thing that people are most deficient in is zinc. And this has been really important, especially as we've gone through COVID and this time, is that we really need to support our immune systems. Zinc also is responsible for the repair of our gut. It's responsible for wound healing. It's responsible for muscle recovery, but it's the number one mineral for your immune system. So if there are three nutrients you need, those would be at the top. And in terms of supplements that would go alongside those nutrients, again, I would say like a collagen powder, probably a probiotic would be next, because so many people are deficient. I know that I'm giving a lot of information here, but I hope it's helpful. 80% of antibiotics given today are not given to humans. They're given to livestock like cows. So there are a lot of antibiotics that we're getting, not even from medications, but also from our food supply, water supply, hand sanitizers, sprays that we don't even realize we're getting. So I found a lot of people to be deficient. There was a Stanford study that came out recently that said, if you take a probiotic supplement, it could double the your B vitamin and micronutrient absorption. So think about this. If you're taking certain supplements and your gut isn't healthy, you're not absorbing very much of it. And what probiotics do is they're really going to sometimes double your absorption. I mean, it's really, really significant. And the thirds would be, you know, getting some greens in your diet. You could do a green superfood powder or something like that. But those would be the top supplements, I would say. And then the last thing I would say for health and longevity, one of the things I do every morning, is I do a spiritual triathlon. And this is something I had a mentor do who is just incredible. But basically it's like this. I wake up in the morning and I go on a gratitude walk. So I get a walk in and I just, you know, I tell God everything I'm grateful for. And then sometimes I'll listen to maybe some like, you know, worship music or something like that. But I'll go on a walk and do that. And then when I get back inside, I'll spend some time reading something. It might be my Bible or a book about the book or even a leadership book, but I'll read something. And then I'll spend some time just in prayer and meditation on that. And I'll pray. And then I'll also think about how can I apply what I just read. And you know, one of the things I noticed is when I start my morning like that, with that sort of spiritual nourishment and going on a walk like that, man, I just, you know, you've probably heard this before. This is probably a quote from Brian Tracy or Zig Ziglar, one of those incredible men. But, you know, win the morning, win the day. Yep. And so I try, and every single morning, I get my spiritual time. I get a quick workout in, say hey to the family, you know, just, you know, sit down with my daughter and wife and eat for 30 minutes. And then I get to work. But, you know, when I do that in my mornings, it's just, it really just creates momentum throughout the whole day.
Well, to our community, I want you, you know, you've heard this on almost everybody that we've talked to. Anytime you see people that are succeeding in any area, they're almost always succeeding in the morning. There's generally some type of a game plan. And Dr. X, I love that the spiritual triathlon, that is rich and powerful. And then the other thing I wanted to highlight that you said, because this is a principle that can help change so many lives, you said, just change breakfast. And I like that. Because most people think, well, I'm not doing very much at all, but you're doing more than just changing breakfast. You're changing a third of your diet, but you're also changing your mindset. And so the very first meal of the day is kind of setting the tone of this is what a healthy person does. They eat this for breakfast. And so then at 10 in the morning or 11 in the morning, you might think, well, since I did that, something healthy for breakfast, I might reach for some almonds or whatever a healthy snack would be next. And then one by one, like if you look at the people say, Craig, you're really disciplined. Like I'm actually not. I'm very undisciplined. But one by one, I started bringing on healthy disciplines. And it would start with a meal. And then it would be a snack. And then it would be a walk. And then it would be time in prayer. And then it would be journaling. And one by one, little by little over time, those disciplines compound and create a different person, different leader, different impact. And so I love those things. Can you tell us the book, Think This, Not That? Who is this for? And why should our community pick the book up?
Yeah, you know, I think this book is for anybody that wants to grow personally, anybody that wants to become a better leader, and anyone that wants to experience a breakthrough. So what I go through in the book is 12 mind shifts in order to grow to your optimal level and experience breakthroughs. And I really believe, Craig, I mean, so just to share this, and again, and I don't want this to sound like boasting anyway, but just to share how important breaking a limiting belief could be. I went from barely graduating high school to being able to, you know, grow the number one natural health website. As I mentioned, I never dreamed I'd go to Johns Hopkins and graduate with a 3.9 GPA. I was on the Inc. 5000 list with my business 2 years in a row. I built a company that's doing over $100 million in sales. There are a number of things. And I say all that to say this. If I wouldn't have address that one limiting belief in my life, no, I don't think any of that would have happened. And so I think it's just so important that we go and look at, where's my wrong thinking? Where are the things that I need to address, those mindset breakthroughs I need? And so that's really what I do in the book, is I really dive deep into a lot of those things. Here's the mind shift you need to have, this sort of new mindset in order to break free. So I think, again, leadership, personal growth, people experiencing mindset breakthroughs is a big part of what the book's about.
Well, I think anyone in any form of leadership should pick this book up, because what you've accomplished, and you're still young, but you've got like very, very deep, significant success in many different spheres of life. Everything, I mean, from coaching, teaching, medicine, consulting, building businesses. And so you're the type of person that knows how to scale, knows how to think, knows how to find great talent, knows how to empower people, knows how to create systems, knows how to manage resources. And you've done it over and over and over again. And to take what you've learned and to make it available to the rest of us is a gift. So the book is called Think This, Not That. I want to give away some copies. And so for those of you on our YouTube community, if you'd like the book, if you're not listening on YouTube, just hop on over to YouTube and just put in the comment section, I want to think this, not that. Just type that in. I want to think this, not that. And then we'll give away five of those books. And Dr. X, I just appreciate your heart to serve people. I appreciate your generosity with what you've learned. If our community wants to learn more about you and kind of dig in, what's the best way for them to reach you and find out more?
Well, I'd say one is, I've got a podcast that really focuses on personal growth and some on health, and you're going to be a guest on there.
I'd
encourage everybody, go on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube and just search Dr. Axe and Craig Rochelle on there, because you're going to be on there soon too. And so anyway, so yeah, I'd encourage people to listen to the podcast. Another place would just be social media. It's just at Dr. Josh Axe. I'm putting out a lot of growth information there. And also, I do want to say, if people get the book and on Amazon and they punch in the code that they get on Amazon and they go to joshaxe.com, I've got a lot of other free bonuses we have. I have interviews I've done with Dave Ramsey and Carrie Underwood and a number of other people. You'll get those free bonuses. I have a mindset masterclass and the workbook. You'll get those free if you kind of, go to joshaxe.com and get those there. But Craig, I just want to say thanks so much for having me. It's such an honor. Again, I've been hearing you, lead and teach for so long. And so this is really, really an honor to come on your show and be able to share some of the things I've learned from learning from people like you. So thanks again so much.
Well, it's my honor to have you on, and I can't wait for our community to learn from you. The book is called Think This, Not That. And it is available now. I hope that our community will dive in and just devour this information, because it will help you get better. And we know that everyone wins when the leader gets better. Thanks so much for being on, Dr. Axe.